So thank you so much for coming to PHM. This is really nice to meet you in Istanbul.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Finally get a chance to meet the one and only P.A. Hamid.
Thank you, appreciate it. So how did you find Istanbul?
Oh, it's such a big city, you know. Heard it's probably the largest city in Europe, and with such rich history and culture, I found it there to be a lot to explore. So a couple of days is probably not enough, but really hoping to come back again for more opportunities later on.
Yeah, like to explore Istanbul, you at least need 10 days, probably.
Yeah, minimum.
But so far, it's a huge city and so many things to see and explore. Yeah, and experience them. So yeah, it's really good to see you in here and have our studio. We've been collaborating for so long, almost 2 years, but this is the moment that we meet up. It's really nice after so many workshops and events that we did together, and you're just right now like a celebrity going around the world giving lectures and living this good life of being famous.
Wouldn't necessarily say that, but I won't complain. It's been
Yeah.
nice.
Yeah, nice. So that being said, what should we know about Thimphu that we can't find them online, or where are you coming from? Where did you study architecture? How did you get into this?
Really put my whole life in a brief story. I could say we start off with being born in China, and then my family immigrated together, and then we were set up in Canada. So most of my life growing up in Canada, and then that's where I also studied my undergraduate in architecture. And so from there,
Where did you study?
at Toronto Metropolitan University.
Mm-hmm.
So, 4 years gone by from there. I actually first got my taste of sort of that high-end digital architecture when our program had an opportunity to travel to Jordan, part of the AA visiting school in Jordan. And that's when I first got acquainted with Architectural Association, the type of work that they're doing, and the high-tech mixed with cultural aspects. And that really caught my interest. So from there, I realized, high-end computation and parametric algorithms, these are potentially tools to push architectural design to the next level. And so from there, I really decided to pursue that particular path.
How was AA versus like is it like was it like a surprise for you, or was it like having so many challenging things to do
Yeah,
on
I
your
mean, AA visiting school was only like a 10-day thing. So for me, it was a bit of a gateway to the whole world. And there's so much to learn in the realm of parametric design and computational algorithms. So it really just caught my attention to start looking into the depth of what's capable. But it's actually afterwards when I started working in Hong Kong for about 2 years that I started to really build my understanding of parametric algorithms by working as a specialist using Grasshopper and these algorithmic tools, working for large-scale projects in China and Hong Kong. And from there is when I decided after the 2 years to apply for Architectural Association in London. So from there, that's when I actually got into the program. We learned a lot about the various aspects of advanced computational design, especially what is cutting edge, what is bleeding edge, evolutionary genetic algorithms, agent-based algorithms, just also using coding and various aspects of computation in order to generate complex geometries, to create facade systems, material systems, all the way to urbanization, urban systems. So all of these things kind of are possibilities to explore. And after I did my thesis at master's at the AA, I decided to stay in London to pursue a career that are more aligned with these specializations. And that's how I started working in London.
So, how did you get into Zaha?
Yeah, Zaha has been my last couple of years, my final couple of years working in office. I would say before that, I actually got into an office called IJP Architects. This is a small office that I was recommended by my professor from AA to work there. And so with a small office, I was project lead because we were doing a competition in Dubai, the Dubai Creek Harbor Footbridge. And we won the competition. And after that, I was officially employed there for about 2 years working on this particular project. And afterwards, it's projects on like Dazine, CNN, Arc Daily, things like that. So building a nice repertoire in the background, I was able to apply to Architectural Association. Sorry, not architectural. Apply to Zaha Hadid, also with the help of a recommendation from a friend. I eventually landed a job, a post at ZH Code, the computational department of Zaha Hadid. So from there, this is where they try to push you to work on the heavy computational side of things, of how to engineer and construct buildings that are complex geometries you find in Zaha Hadid. And this is exactly what I was specializing in my whole life, and was it's exactly what I was really passionate about.
Yeah, you were with Shajai, and also...
Yes, yeah. Shajai Bhushan. At that time, we did an interview, and he accepted me.
Nice.
And found out my, you know, my background really fitted well with the team.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a few years just flown by like that.
I've seen you talking French and lecturing French, and you know English, you know your Chinese, and you know a little bit of Arabic. Have you set up any chips in your
and
mind?
Spanish.
Or, and Spanish. Have you set up any chips in your mind, or have you installed any AI tool to talk all these languages? Where,
no.
where does all these come from?
No, I think this is, there's many people that speak more languages than me. This is just one of those quirks that I have, like really interested in language learning. It's part of my hobby. So yeah, French is something that I took a bit more serious after university. And so I, you know, regularly watch French TV and learn. And also Spanish as well is a language that I felt easier to learn after I have a decent level in French, because they're more linked as a Romance language. So I just thought, like, you know, if it's easier, I'll learn it. And the Arabic is just because it's such a fascinating language and culture. It's a personal sort of interest to learn, although hugely, hugely difficult. So
yeah.
I don't really know much. I think it's false to say that I know much at all.
You know, also some Persian words, Persian food, Persian culture.
Yes, of course. I just love Persian culture as well. I mean, you know, I'm a world explorer, and I love every aspect of different cultures.
Regarding the works of Zaha, I'll also, if we check some of his works since the beginning and until 2004, 2005, there's this unique style that Zaha is trying to present in some of his works. Then there's after that 2004, 2005, let's say, that's with the formation of also ZH Code. And what do you think has been changed since the emergence of so many of these advanced tools like Maya and then Rhino Grasshopper in the style that Zaha was doing architecture? Because it's a little bit different. Zaha's mostly designs were focused on the linear movements in the buildings, but after that you see that fluidity in surfaces and also three-dimensional curvatures. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that if you want to share.
I wasn't employed during the span of this that long, obviously, but we can all speculate. I think there's a lot of experimentation that's done in the office, which is a wonderful thing, because I would say they have their eras. You know, there's different eras with different computational tools that's available, and that's how we eventually end up with different trajectories. And as our office grow, we have clusters, each pertaining to their own sort of research, their process, as well as their design ethos, I would say. So I think with the formation of Zaha Code, we did see a change from a more of a circulation narrative driven, I would say, type of architecture, to a process that's more bound on geometry processing, and mostly, I would say, mesh processing type of algorithms. And
mostly, at the beginning, it was Maya focused meshes.
I mean, Maya's always been like a big part, I think, just due to the way that you know, our surfaces, many of which are governed by subdivision oriented type of geometries. And with Maya, that's really helpful for that.
Right.
Yeah. But at the same time, I work in the parametric facade team as a specialist, namely for the project Unicorn Island. in China. And if you know the project, there's about like, know, you know, 20, 30 buildings in there. And each building has their own sort of eccentricities. So as a facade specialist, I was jumping from building to building, helping out the team, figuring out how to, you know, program and code the facades and rationalize it to make it constructible and feasible. And that's kind of like my line of work, which is also quite different from that pure mesh processing side. So I'm using that type of computational algorithms in order to generate even for the BIM team. I process geometries in order to be sent to the BIM team. We do like budget calculations. Mm-hmm. We do area surface calculations. So these are all kind of like different specializations that we have in the team. So everyone has their own role to fulfill. And that's mine at the time.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, like, I mean, Shajai and Vishu and all the some of those guys are really good friends of us. And I always admire their work and the capabilities, the possibilities that they're bringing into architecture profession. And yeah, they're doing a really great job. And some of the great projects they have hands on. Yeah, a great admirer. So, talking about AI and the emergence of artificial intelligence tools, you are also one of the people who knows computation and parametric design deeply, working with different softwares, and you know the benefits of AI while it's emerging with the with our profession. And you were one of the first guys who entered this world, and with so many of experimentations, testing stuff, and your visuals were all over the world, all over the around the internet. And so maybe you can talk a little bit about how did you get into AI, and when you discovered how did you find the process of prompt to image generation?
Yeah. I say it's a span of a very short time, but really it's a long story because there were a lot of decision-making and thinking going on in the process. But namely, it started around when Midjourney version 3 came out. You know, around that time, it's about like August, July of last year, 2022. And started out just by, you know, browsing Instagram, social media, and then realizing, like the rest of us, wow, there's AI generated images and content online. And of course, some of the early birds started to generate architectural images. And that really caught my interest. And at that time, I remember seeing a lot of stuff being tagged designed by Zaha Hadid. Like, here's a chair designed by Zaha Hadid. Here's a table. Here's a building. Here's a Roman Colosseum. And here's a house. And, you know, at the early phase, everyone just typed that word in and you just see like these craziest forms going on. And so I thought like, wow, this is like definitely resembles some elements of Zaha Hadid, but at the same time, it's so chaotic and uncontrolled. And after you've seen it quite a lot, it's just kind of like, it doesn't taste particularly good, for lack of a better word. So I decided to, you know, with my background in the office, I wanted to see what I can do with it to interpret Zaha Hadid architecture. So that's when I started to use AI, use Midjourney, realized it was chaotic, and started to figure out how to control it to do something more refined, a little more controlled, and finally things that can be constructed. So that was my goal. That was a bit different from everyone else at the time. I was always trying to find the ways to make it look constructible. And from there, I just, you know, collected all my creations one by one through Instagram. And just over time, things kind of grew. People got interested to see how I can continue pushing that aspect, mm-hmm. and followed me to see how I can generate more contents like that. And yeah, just the short story is that it got me to today with you.
Nice. So in a short time, your content got viral and you had so many interactions, and your followers are also grown exponentially on the Instagram. You've been invited around to give lectures and speak. So I wonder what was the reaction in the office about this this fame that you were having. And
the over spicy
the
question comes out. Well, I think you know, there weren't a lot of there weren't a lot of comments initially, especially among the staffs in the higher roles. They just kept quiet, but the people at my level were all kind of very happy for what's happening with me, as many of them were trying to do the same thing. But over time, I think it's gotten to a point where I've had quite a lot of press coverage. And, understandably, that's become a concern for the office because, sort of there's a sense of trademark and image management and protection. And obviously, as someone who is coming from a junior position in the office, there should be a limit to how much to how I represent and how I showcase the work that I do and how I either associate or disassociate with such a big brand like Zaha Hadid. Because of course, on one hand, you could do whatever and take advantage of the name, but on the other hand, you could be responsible and do things that the office work on together, mm-hmm. as a collective. And so that's why I think at some point there's a sort of a clear dichotomy that I had to establish, a clear distinction, where I would always make sure that my work is strictly not associated with Zaha Hadid. I've been told to not, for example, put hashtag Zaha Hadid as a hashtag even. And those things, I understand. So I make sure that I disassociate from it as much as possible.
Was there any strict reaction?
Well, it's gotten to a point where we do have to discuss how to proceed in the future and whether my future lies with more dedication to the office or something else that I pursue. So obviously, around the middle of this year, we had private conversations, yes. You knew that I made the big decision to jump out of the office because I think working under that scenario, under the restrictions, although it's the big name and it's been a dream of mine to work in such an office, eventually I think most architects want to decide to grow independently and to take a big risk. And for me, that was the big risk for me, just to figure out how much momentum I have, whether it's worth it to take it on my own. And I think I made a clear decision in the end to say, I have a lot of ambitions. I have a lot of ideals of how to operate with AI in an office that's different from the other folks working there. And I also want to just pursue my own path, especially in design. I have some design, thinking and narratives, I think, that will deviate from what the standard Zaha Hadid thinking is. And I think there should be also some clear ways to readapt an office towards this AI revolution that I think I will have a lot more easier time with to implement as my own office CEO. I can finally experiment on that.
Right. It becomes sometimes to a point that you can't completely rely or completely grow after a certain point while you are involved in another brand, another company, and definitely you want to grow on your own bit, on your own way, and implement the ideas that yourself have. And that is the mm-hmm. point that you need to make a decision whether you want to go on your own way or just on the brand. And I had the same type of story that I have discussed this with you. You know about it, and that point is a critical point whether you want to change everything and accept the hardships of everything, or whether you want to accept the same type of the path that you were coming. Definitely, if you want something new, you have to make hard decisions and accept the challenges and hardships. And after that, you did this. You started your own company, Studio Timfu. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And maybe you can tell us a little bit what's the focus point of Studio Timfu and what are you trying to do there?
Yeah, I mean, it's another dream of mine to have achieved, because having all the traction online has actually managed to acquaint me with a lot of people in high positions, I would say, and developers who are interested in my styles and what I can accomplish. So just with that, I have a lot of prospective clients, and we also have ongoing projects now, different parts of the world, in Latin America, we have in Europe, as well as Middle East and Asia, and they're all at different capacities. So I think I'm more busier than ever, but yeah, busy is always good yeah. when you're starting your own office. But at the same time, I always control the amount of projects I get and the quality of it, because when you have a higher quantity, you're able to select the quality. And I also dedicate some time to continuation of the social media aspect that I do, and the research and the sharing of my research and experimentations, because I think the world is mostly interested in seeing what is the capabilities, what are the capabilities of AI and this technology. And for me to be like aspiring to be a pioneer in this aspect, I want to both showcase my research to the world so that it's accessible to the world. Because, you know, me and you, I think we come from the younger generation yeah. where we really want to share everything to the world. It's not just about having an office of proprietorship and stuff like that, but we really value the aspects of education and the aspects of democratizing this whole process to the whole world. So I think that part of me is strong, and I really feel that I want to continue. But on the other hand, I also want to have my office, do real projects, let the world know eventually that this is not just a researcher and someone who is working with AI, but we have ambitions in our office to build cities, build houses, and potentially figure out how this technology is applied to the real world. So it's a balance of the two, and I really try to pursue that.
What is the short-term and long-term vision for the AI in architecture? What do you think about it? Short-term being said, let's say, if it was 20 years ago, I would say short-term is 10 years and long-term is 50 years. But now, since we are in 23 and getting into 24 in a couple of days, short term, let's say 5 years, and long term could be like 20 yes. years.
Yes, like I've heard from the guys from Silicon Valley is like they don't talk about anything after 5 years. They're forbidden to do that because that's a lot of time in this tech advancement space. So yeah, I would say next 1-2 years, we can speculate more accurately or more clearly. Is that this AI boom, we're amidst the crescent. Right now, we're amidst the nascent, and it's just booming. And what I mean by that is seeing all the sectors of the world, from medicine to infrastructure to transportation to data analysis and to aspects of what we're doing in the creative industry. And right now, you know, it's funny because we decided to take this career partly because we think it's a heavily human aspect that is not going to be touched by robotics and AI, as opposed to manufacturing and other aspects. However, we're reaching a point where we realize that's no longer the case. The advancement of computation and AI is very much touching the core of our creative industry. And by that, I mean people that write will now have other aids like ChatGPT for various aspects of the task. We in the visual more side of the spectrum, we have, you know, Midjourney, that's the main one. We have DALL-E, and we have other various sources that does video, that does 2D images to 3D. And what that entails is that it might shift fundamentally how we see a construction going from concept to creation. And what that also means is robotics, automation can potentially take over the construction side of things. And what that ultimately means is the entire process of us having an idea and having it built on concrete, this entire process will become more streamlined. And instead of having humans specializing at each partition of this specialization, we actually have AI and robots link everything up, and we can allow AI to take the roles where it can. So if it can pour concrete for us, we'll let that do that. If it can rationalize geometry for us, we will let AI do that. If we can let AI give us good ideas, we will let AI do that. So it is scary to think how much we can actually see that change. But at the same time, us humans, we're the designer, we're the architects, we have to oversee the whole process. because art is within the human realm of thinking. And overall, I think it's still crucial for us to participate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, we're now in the probably the baby steps of AI, and image generation, video generation could be the first very step that we're having. And I'm sure that we're going to get into more on the 3D modeling, BIM management, and data management in architecture with AI, setting up multiple checks and balances and talking to AI to fix the stuff or design things better, optimize them. And of course, about construction, there's good visions for AI to be integrated. And that's a great thing. And one of the things that I also want to discuss with you, you have been using parametric design and computational tools many times before, and the emergence of AI is kind of creating a term that you're using these days, which is called parametric intelligence. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a short workshop of it as well, like a 4-session workshop about parametric intelligence. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more and expand the idea of what do you mean by parametric intelligence, and how does it relate to parametric architecture plus artificial intelligence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the short story is it's a mix of parametric architecture and artificial intelligence. And the longer story is that I think there is a school of thought that has been developed since, you know, our postmodern era, where parametricism, I suppose, is coined by Patrick Schumacher. And I think the idea is really clear. And the concept is always sort of misconceived. But parametricism is an approach where we're using computation algorithms and seeing the world through parameters, really. We're just allowing, things in our maybe function, occupancy, in natural environment to dictate as parameters how forms will be created and oriented based on these things. And what that means is everything can be connected to everything. Walls can be connected to ceilings. And that's why it automatically invites a sense of fluidity, not because it's a style, but because it's just how it should be if parameters themselves are organically sort of perceived, which is why in nature, we don't see so many corners with squares and rectangles. We see how nature as an architect actually designs in a very fluid way. And that beauty that we see in nature can now be sort of amplified with computational technologies in our construction world, because we understand the efficiencies of circle packing, for example, efficiencies of honeycomb structures, the efficiencies of fractal systems. And so that's why these type of complex geometry requires algorithms, because nature is built with algorithms, right, of our DNA. So with those algorithms and computational thinking, that brought on this era of sort of parametric design, which is crucial for us to move on to the next stage of architectural complexity. I think we played for a very long time modernism and minimalism, and people want to see that divine beauty that we've seen in the past. You know, I was looking in the museum in Istanbul, and I'm seeing, gosh, the Turks were so opulent before with their beautiful geometries and their, even on their clothing, the ornate, all the decorative elements, and all that sort of things that we celebrate in the past kind of dissipated as the sort of postmodern and modern thinking of just getting rid of all those elements. And so, yeah, parametricism kind of allows us to bring those ideals back, but in a more pure formalist and functional way. And so I think complexity in those regards is actually a functional complexity, not for ornamentation. And then now comes artificial intelligence, throwing another wrench into this whole process, because what that means is it is an intelligence in a way that it's creating and thinking in autonomy, which means that we can link the aspect of parametricism, allowing those creations to be dictated by human parameters. Whether you're sitting on this chair, you need a certain warmth here, you need a little bit of back support there, and then it kind of gradients into a different direction. And those type of requirements can be given to the AI, and then the AI can produce very complex results, but thousands of them, hundreds of thousands of them, with various visual aesthetics, with various functionalities, and other aspects of AI can also examine its own results and tell you whether or not it fulfills the environmental parameters, whether your building is, there is a lot of solar gain, solar radiation, or if it's a wind tunnel, how it performs under the wind load, how it performs under various aspects, and how much floor space it creates for the client, how we can maximize the budget, minimize the material. All of these parameters can make an architecture complex, but if we allow AI to group them all together, we almost have a sort of general intelligent architectural supporter that will help the architect to go through the entire process. And we're not there yet. We're starting to insert AI into various aspects of parametric design, but it promises that this is a start, which promises that we're going to see more, which promises in the future we will see the whole process.
Of course. This is really an anticipated future that we're all looking forward. Yeah, and I think there's a great potential and opportunity for all of us to go and explore and have these technologies integrated with our profession. And I'm also interested, I'm also looking to those chatbots to be integrated with our softwares to, instead of 3D modeling or managing everything inside the software, just to talk to the chatbot which does everything for you. That's also a good part that will have a lot of effect in architecture. And also I wanted to talk about yesterday we had this CDNext conference and we also discussed this right there, and I want to know your idea about after the emergence of tools like Grasshopper, which enabled hundreds of iterations of options and many types of ideas that it would offer for you. Now AI is doing it much more than before, and in seconds you can have hundreds of ideas about even what designing one single project, or you can have so many different types of styles embedded, and even maybe you don't have anything in your mind, you might be bombarded with lots of possibilities and flood of ideas, and it would be a little bit hard to select among them or choose which path is the right way to go with any certain design. Of course, you can apply different disciplines, you can apply different rules that you want this in that way, you want this in this way, and apply many real world parameters and measurements to select what you exactly want. So in this flood of ideas and idea generations, how do you proceed forward with whatever you want to showcase as the final as the final result of your project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really live in the age of abundance now, is something I would say. This really means that it's more important than ever to be the human, because when we are bombarded with such a high quantity, it's incredibly crucial to understand quality among the quantity. And while machine right now give you the quantity, the role of the human is to find the quality. So I would say that pertains to having been a good architect and designer, having a good educational background, having a good understanding of the world and the traditions and the cultures and the human needs of your clients and the users. So you do want to definitely have that collective knowledge. And then you need to have that sort of visual acuity, the aesthetics motivations that you have as a designer. So that I would say a bit of that talent obviously is necessary in order to be the best designer. And once you aggregate all of those human parameters, you as the architect and designer is in control. And by using those parameters, your design ethos, you select and you guide the AI to the direction that you need. So I would say, yes, AI can produce tons of qualities, but you need to have that education and the background and the knowledge and skills in order to guide the AI towards the best possible outcome. And so a good designer will give you a good outcome, but a great designer will give you an even better outcome. So at the end of the day, really, AI is like a tool. It's a tool that superpowers good designers and great designers, but equally. The greater designer will be more powered than the good designer. And so it's a very human aspect. And this tool, for me, is not something that is alien at all, as some people would say, as they would think that...
Neil Leach is calling it alien intelligence.
Yes, that's one of my thinking right now. It's alien definitely in the sense that we don't understand how it works. And from his point of view, yeah, alien intelligence meaning that it's fundamentally different to how we think as humans, which is okay. And that's the sense of the word alien, but not in a sense that it's going to create things that are unfamiliar to us, that's going to take us away from our values. Because again, with all the quantity of possibilities, we're going to be the one that's driving the AI towards designing. So any good and great designers will take any tool for their benefit, so that they're not controlled by the AI, but they control the AI.
Well, thank you for sharing your ideas about this. What kind of AI tools you are using in your daily, day-to-day basis?
Well, right now, a lot of tools come to mind, but I think namely, the main tools that I use is Midjourney for pure visual creations and generative imagery, design understanding. And then you have programs like LookX, which is based off of image inputs that you can insert yourself, which means you can, you know, either do a sketch or you can take a 3D model that you've modeled and insert it and allow it to generate details. So the merging of the two, I think, is a good combination. And that's right now what I've been using alongside 3D softwares and parametric softwares. And in addition, there are other means that I do use from time to time, like, for example, Runway ML. That's a program that allows you to get your AI-generated buildings, and it could render into a video. And it only takes a few seconds. And that will give you like a 10-second walkthrough in 3D, it looks like, as a video format.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to see a spatial quality of something that you created with AI in such a short time. And there's also, for example, other AIs that are right now under development that's going from 2D to 3D, taking an image in 2D and generating them in 3D. Right now, as we're speaking today, those technology are not mature. There's various problems with it, but that's something that's improving quite fast. And I think many of the viewers that's going to watch this by then is already there.
I wonder why we don't see any AI tool from Autodesk. They're dominating the whole industry.
Right.
Softwares, Maya, 3ds Max, Fusion, AutoCAD. And they have so much data. And I just wonder.
Yeah, I think there actually might be a clear answer to that. Because, you know, CAD softwares, their entire legacy is based off of building off of 3D modeling tools. But the progression of AI, that's quite different, because if we're talking about AI, neural network, deep learning, genetic adversarial network, this is another line of research. And there's other, you know, companies that quite excel at this. And it's a different set of skill sets to be coding, to understand deep learning, and to understand diffusion modeling. That's not exactly linked to 3D, to the modeling process. And that's why also large language model with OpenAI and what they're doing or the competitors, that's also like a separate domain. That's why we have those people that are spearheading these domains and they have the technical expertise. I think what AutoCAD and Revit and all these software programs can do is learn to collaborate with these guys. Learn to collaborate as in by feeding them architectural data sets, by feeding them feedback on the interface adaptation so that we can allow these things to become more collaborative in the future. And I'm sure there will be a day where experts from the AI department will collaborate with experts from the modeling department, such as AutoCAD. And by then, we'll probably have very powerful tools to generate a lot of ideas directly in 3D. But yeah, the final word is like, you know, it's 3D modeling. It's a different world than AI. And we're just here to see it merge.
Yeah, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So thank you. What do you think about our platform, PA, Tim?
I mean, I think PA is obviously one of my most looked up to when I was starting my undergrad, actually. This is when I discovered parametric architecture on Instagram. Long before we spoke, long before we're doing all of these things, I was just a student curious about what type of architectures is out there. And, you know, at that time, the first thing that really caught my interest was parametric design, as I said before. So your channel was kind of like the first one that I followed that specialized in that. Every day I get to see inspirations that actually motivates me to do architecture, because I was not motivated by the modernism and by the historical architecture that I was learning at the time in my school in Toronto. So from there, you know, I kept a lot of close tabs on what you guys are doing. You guys have a lot of also open the possibility for tutoring, for teaching, and also allow other people that are young in the industry to participate, both as tutors and as participants. And I was part of this process. You brought me on, and that also helped me grow myself as well, right? Yeah. So it's funny, it's all like linked. But overall, that's definitely a powerful idea that you have. Your platform creates voices for many people in the discipline, especially in architecture. It's very, I would definitely say, and most people will agree with me, despite how controversial, it's a very elitist industry where yes. It's very top down, and most offices are top down, the education is top down. But it's funny because we're in this new era where new technology is uprooting some of the principles and the way we think. And the many old ways we think may not be adaptable anymore to today's environment. And so I think it is powerful to give voice to the young generation, especially ones that are tech savvy, because they're the one that's going to build the future with these new tools. You know, if we didn't, for example, promote AutoCAD and all those software in the past, we would still be sketching everything by hand. Absolutely. And just doing things like in the Stone Ages. But we always embrace technologies in this industry. And I think the industry now is starting to realize that as well. And they're really embracing things like AI. So obviously, your platform democratizes this whole process for everybody in different parts of the ladder. And I think that's a really great thing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. And what we try to do at PA is mostly to inform everyone about the new tools and technologies that are emerging with our industry, and not only share articles and projects, but also teach about them, that how are these tools are being used in our profession, manufacturing also, and also give opportunity for people who are interested, who are doing good work, to give them exposure, discover young talents, and also share the things that they are doing in their projects, and creativity, and share the things that they're doing creatively in their projects so other people can learn. So we're focused on so many things, and these are the aspects that mostly covers the whole idea of what we do at PA and the Academy and the other sort of the things that we are focused on. So as a final question, or as a final topic, what would you like to share with young professionals and emerging talents like yourself? Because you're now like being a role model for all those people who are interested in working with AI, and they're always checking you and checking others, how creative people are doing. So maybe you can share a couple of advices for the young people.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really privileged to be in a position where a lot of people do look up to me in the sense of how to really proceed with their career. And I think on my end, what I've discovered is that you have to have some sort of strong values of what you believe in. And in the process of growing and becoming an expert or a specialist in that particular subject, it is important not to get distracted by various aspects of your growth, which I've seen a lot of people end up doing. Either that is making choices for financial gains, making choices for convenience, or making choices for the pure fame of it. I think you just have to be kind of driven to do the things that you want to do. And for me, that is, you know, showcasing the aspects of AI and architecture and potentially trying to change the industry in this way. Like, that's my ultimate goal. So the idea of, you know, rising in popularity or gaining more followers or earning more money, having bigger projects than the client, those are all kind of like, I would just call them bonuses. They don't drive me in the decision making that I do. I have a deep rooted philosophy of where I believe the society should go. And I'm here to just talk about it and learn as well in the process. And I think also final thing is, like, you really have to be humble in the face of new advancements and technologies, and humble in the face of everything. I think for me, one of my aspects is just seeing new technologies that's coming about and seeing different people and how they use it. And I constantly learn from other people, and always don't be too like too sure that a certain way of doing things is the right way because everyone says it is. I think anything can be questioned and anything can be up for the grabs when new technology comes to change society, which means we really live on uncertain times. And it's just good to be more flexible and understand it's a time to learn, it's a time to explore, it's not a time to be sure. So I think if that's the mentality that you put forth as you continue your career in architecture or anything, I think that's that prepares you for what you may experience. And once you see an opportunity, you pursue it. You pursue it and you try to defy odds. You defy a lot of people around you, and potentially that will help you progress into a better version of yourself and a better version of what you can accomplish for society. So I think, long story short, just be open-minded.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much, Tim, for stopping by. I think this was a great conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Hamid.
Thank you.
It's been such a pleasure.
Awesome.
Awesome. Great.